The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Have the changes in the banking industry affected you? With the looming possibility that your local bank branch might disappear and more web, mobile, and social technologies, what will the changes mean for you and your business? Welcome to Breaking Banks with your host, Brett King. The possibility that banking is no longer a place you go, but just something that you do, has become very real. Now, here is Brett King.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks this week. I am back on the East Coast. It's February the 20th, and I'm talking to you from Connecticut today, but not far from New York City. Of course, the big news today is the announcement of Simple's acquisition by BBVA. So, well done, Josh and Shamir. Fantastic news for the industry of these startups in the space. If you guys haven't heard the news, the announcement was that BBVA has made an acquisition of Simple. The figure that's been put out is $117 million. So for their 100,000 customers, that's about, it's something in the tune of $1,200 per customer, but that's not really the point, of course. It's a validation of this this new model sitting on top of existing banks, but doing something great with user experience. So that's a big validation, I think, for the model. Well done to the guys at Simple. I spoke to Josh briefly today. I asked him to him and or Shamir to come on the show briefly to just give us some news about it. So they're going to see what they can do. Fingers crossed we can get a few minutes with those guys today. But to kick off our discussion, as part of sort of this disruptive play in these new models in the financial services space, today I have the great pleasure of talking to the teams at Lending Club and LendUp. And first up, I'd like to ask Tom Green to join us. Tom is... you're CEO at Lending Club, that's right, Tom?
I'm VP of New Initiatives at Lending Club. It's nice to be on the show, Brett.
Sorry. Renee's still the CEO, right?
Yeah, Renaud Laplanche is our founder and CEO, French entrepreneur who has recently got his U.S. citizenship.
Very good. Oh, that's good. So tell us a bit about what's happening at Lending Club right now. You guys have been growing incredibly. It just seems to, every time I look at the numbers on Lending Club, the growth seems to be accelerating significantly. I mean, you've roughly doubled the size of the business, what, in the last, 14 months, or is it shorter than that?
Yeah, that's right. So as many of your listeners may know, Lending Club is an online marketplace for credit. So we have borrowers on one side and investors on the other. We source, underwrite, and service loans, and we also grade them, giving each loan a particular price so investors can understand the level of risk they're taking when they fund a loan. It's really a very disruptive model in financial services, almost going back a little bit to the roots of banking. When money was first invented, people would lend money to each other. Since then, we've got these national institutions, the banks, which have grown very large. What we're doing is sort of taking it a little bit back to its roots, enabling investors to directly fund borrowers. And we're using technology to make that process a lot more efficient. And we're really passing the savings on to borrowers and investors, allowing them to be better off than they would otherwise have been. Because of that, and to your question, we've really been seeing very rapid growth over the last few years, and we've doubled or more than doubled every year for the last few. Last year, we facilitated a little over $2 billion in loans through the platform, and we've been continuing to grow our volume every month.
So what would you say is really the secret to that success of that growth? You know, because obviously consumers need to be aware of what you guys are doing. So, you know, how have you raised LendingClub's profile, and where's the demand coming from, Tom?
Yeah, so the secret to the success sort of at its root is the fact that by using technology to make the process more efficient, we're able to offer borrowers much lower rates than they can get from their credit card company or their bank, and investors get much higher returns than leaving their money in the bank. So that's sort of at the root of it. But in addition, as you pointed out, people have to be aware of that. We have a number of ways to make that happen. The first and very importantly is as we get bigger, the profile of our company just raises. People hear about us through their friends, through their connections, through the press, through shows like this one, and they sort of come to us hearing about this model and what it might mean for them. So that's really important for us. And because of that, it's very important to us to deliver a fantastic customer experience. That's absolutely at the core of our DNA and what we're about. Partly because it's just important anyway, but partly because it actually helps with our growth. We also do various types of marketing to make sure that we're putting the word out there and finding ways to attract ever increasing numbers of borrowers.
Now, we had Giles Andrews on, it's a few months ago now, and he's obviously one of the founders of Zopa, one of the early P2P lenders. I'm sure you guys are familiar with them out of the UK. And an interesting trend was starting to develop with Zopa, over the last few months, which is a lot of institutional investors were paying a lot of attention to Zopa, and there was a lot of demand from institutional investors putting money in on the savings side, whereas it was definitely more on the consumer side for the lending. In fact, that's where they were targeted. And I'm guessing you guys have seen the same sort of pattern, because looking at your recent investments that you've made, obviously to fund this growth in being able to offer credit to the market, you know, you've had to go further afield for investors. But you've had some pretty strong institutional support at that level. Am I correct?
Yes, that's right. Over time, we have looked to diversify the base of investors that are funding the loans through our platform. We got started with just sort of retail investors, individuals who wanted to fund loans. But as we grew, we felt it was important to build up a more diversified set of investors, and so we have been we've been taking on more sources of capital, including institutional capital, which has been important for us. Having said that, we're still both types of investors, both individual and institutional, are growing. So we're bringing on new retail investors all the time as well.
So you've got no problem funding the growth, I think. You got no problem funding your growth, it sounds like.
Well, that's right. I mean, one thing that's obviously important for any marketplace is to keep both sides in balance. And so it's important to us, in our context, to keep borrowers and investors in balance. And in order to do that, we've needed to bring on more and more sources of capital over time to fund the incredible growth we're seeing in demand on the borrower side.
So what are you guys lending on a monthly basis right now? What's the loan book it look like on a monthly basis?
So last month we facilitated $258 million in loans through our platform, which was another record month.
That's fantastic. It's considering the growth you guys have had. You're now starting to get up to the point where you must be. You know, you're starting to move the dial in percentage terms in terms of the retail lending market. Yeah, you know, we must be counting you as a percent or two of the personal lending market. But that's maybe a stat for another time. In terms of the magic of Lending Club, and I don't want to get into too much of the detail, but you guys have performed on a default basis pretty well compared with the industry throughout the financial crisis. I mean, you guys grew right throughout this period when most other firms were really clamping down on their lending practices and tightening up on credit. So, you know, how have you guys been able to maintain that growth throughout that period of the financial crisis when others were sort of battening down the hatches?
We have a very strong focus on maintaining good credit risk performance because really our investors trust us to do that. And if we can maintain that investor trust, then we can continue to grow our business. And if we can't, then we don't have both sides of the marketplace anymore. So I think for us, it is just of such critical importance to manage credit risk effectively to deliver strong returns that we've invested very, very heavily in doing that, both on the technology side, where we have systems that really help us to do that very effectively, and also on the credit risk analysis side, where we have a large and expert team of people led by some real sort of veterans of the industry whose sole reason for living really is to manage credit risk in our business. And obviously, the bigger we get, the more data we have, and the more ability we have to get even better at that over time.
And would you say that's engine that you guys have built is really that intelligence you've built that's gone beyond just sort of the plain, credit score assessment of risk is why you're also able to deliver, pretty impressive, pretty low default rates compared with the rest of the industry, even the leading banks in that space. Is it come down to data?
It comes down to a combination of things. I think data is part of it. It's sort of about the overall approach of integrating technology and data, and delivering the best customer experience we can as well. And that's actually a really important way to manage credit risk. And I'll tell you why. When you have somebody come on to your site or walk into your branch to apply for a loan, the most desperate people who need the money the most are usually the most persistent and the most willing to put up with a bad customer experience. By delivering a fantastic customer experience, we can actually pull more good borrowers in through the door and get a good credit risk performance. So it's partly about data, but it's also partly about our commitment to the customer experience.
So tell me about that customer experience. Where do you feel that Lending Club is really differentiated in comparison with another lender? Is it speed of response? Is it the application process? Where have you guys, removed the friction from what is normally a pretty painful process?
So we operate online, which I think is really important to a lot of our customers. The fact that they can come onto our site, apply for a loan by giving us really a relatively limited set of information. They can do all of that online. They can really manage pretty much their entire relationship with us online. And we actually do a lot of things to remove the burden from borrowers who are applying for a loan. So, for example, if we need to verify a borrower's employment, we have technology-enabled ways to do that, sort of in the background, that do not require the borrower to actually do anything. I think our differentiation is sort of rooted in the idea that we're trying to make the process as seamless and online as possible.
Amazing. So if you're lending at the rate of, $258 million, you're looking at adding a big loan book and another, almost doubling in size again. So what do you anticipate the size of your business is going to be, within the next couple of years?
So I'm not going to speculate about specific numbers, but we're seeing continued very rapid growth, and we expect that to carry on. When you look at the size of even just the consumer credit market today, The credit card market is around between $800 and $900 billion of outstanding receivables. A common reason borrowers come to us is to pay off that expensive credit card debt, and use a LendingClub loan to pay that off much more cheaply and over a defined period of time. So, you know, we did $2 billion last year, and there's $850 billion outstanding. So we see plenty of runway for continued growth there. And that's just in the consumer credit market. We also have plans to enter other markets as well.
So tell me a little bit more about that. You've said in terms of your mix, you've got a lot of customers coming in doing refinancing or consolidating debt. What are the other use cases that people are using LendingClub for? Tell us a bit more about the customers who use LendingClub on the lending side. And then I'd like to get into the flip side of that. Who uses LendingClub to save?
Yeah. So the people that come to us to borrow money to do things other than refinance their credit card debt are really coming to us for a variety of reasons to finance purchases. So that could be the purchase of a wedding, it could be a vacation, could be a car. Home improvement is a popular one. It's really a wide variety of purchases. And on the investor side, I mean, we really have a huge number of different types of people who simply have experienced leaving their money in the bank and earning almost no interest on it, and have experienced the sort of roller coaster ups and downs of the stock market and want to earn a more reliable, solid return on at least a portion of their assets.
What's been that average return compared with, say, the stock market over the last few years? How have you performed comparative to that?
So the returns have been, our investors have been very happy with our returns, which have been in the sort of high single digits on the loans. You know, in the stock market, as you know, in a bad year, it can go down a lot, and you can lose a significant portion of your principal.
A lot of volatility.
And so our investors have been happy with the level of returns, and I think very happy with the low volatility of those returns.
So tell me about what you guys are working on in the next 12 months. What's your focus?
So I'll tell you what the next big thing is, and that's our small business loan product. So we're going to be launching that fairly soon. And really the idea there is that there are by some measures 27 million small businesses in the United States, and there's a huge problem, which is that they're struggling to access the capital they need to grow. Now, small businesses, as you know, are really a huge engine of growth in the American economy, and the fact that their growth is currently constrained by lack of access to capital is a major problem for all those small business owners and their families, and also for the American economy. So we see a huge opportunity there to really open up our credit marketplace to enable small businesses to take advantage of this platform as well, and really access more capital so they can grow.
Great. So, Tom, what I'd like to do is I'd like to jump to a quick break, and then I'm going to ask Sasha to join us from LendUp. And then if you can stick around, I'd like to sort of talk about it. In the last segment, we always do this sort of future gazing where we look sort of 5 to 10 years in the future and how the market's going to change. So if you could stick around, I'd love to have your insights into that. Would that be possible?
Of course, I'd be happy to.
Great. So you're with Breaking Banks. We've just been talking to Tom Green from LendingClub, and we'll be right back after the break, and we'll have a chat with Sasha Orloff from LendUp. So join us after this brief break.
Business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Your bank's customers expect comprehensive, convenient, and consistent service when and where they need it. A mobile app is a great start, but with so many devices and operating systems out there, it can be hard to keep up with demand. That's why today's leading banks count on the Kony Multichannel Experience Cloud. With Kony, you can design, develop, and manage multi-channel apps from one integrated platform. Build an app once, and with one click, you can deploy it securely across all digital channels, phones, tablets, desktop, and more. That means more efficiency for you and a better experience for your customers. Want to get to market fast? Explore Kony's range of ready-to-run apps, including retail, commercial, and private banking. With features like person-to-person transfers, targeted campaigns, built-in integrations, and cutting-edge compliance, Kony apps provide the framework and flexibility you need to rise above the competition. Go beyond first-generation mobile banking. Visit Kony.com/BK to launch your multi-channel strategy. That's Kony.com/BK.
We're always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. I'm Brett King, and at this point, we've just been talking with Tom from Lending Club about some of the great progress they've been making. $258 million they lent just last month. Incredible statistic, given that it wasn't that long ago when that was their total annual loan book value. So incredible to see their growth. Now, a new startup in the space, which is doing some really interesting things, is a company called LendUp. LendUp recently announced a capital raise, and we're very fortunate to have one of the founders of LendUp on with us today, Sasha Roloff. Welcome.
Hi, thanks.
So tell us about LendUp, Sasha, and tell us a little bit more about what you guys have been doing, including your capital raise recently, and where you're positioned, and what LendUp is.
Yeah, that's a good question. So we're a solution to payday lending, and what we're trying to do is change the dynamics of a small dollar loan from a step into a debt trap into an opportunity to build credit. So just to sort of ground everybody, we're a direct lender, so we lend off of our own balance sheet. Customers can apply for a loan from any mobile device or any website and get a decision for a loan instantly. It's full 100% algorithmic decisioning. And new borrowers can borrow up to $250. And over time, customers can earn their way up to $1,000 with rates as low as 29% APR. The money can be deposited instantly into people's bank accounts. And we're the first in the space to take people from the first licensed payday lender that we know about that can report to the major credit bureaus and help our borrowers actually build their score. We call all this the LendUp ladder, and it's built in all through our own technology with this embedded education system. So our borrowers actually earn points for doing things that demonstrate financial responsibility, like taking our animated education courses, paying on time, paying early, checking their loan balances, and the points automatically convert into the ability to borrow more money at significantly lower rates.
So this is actually an interesting point, because there's been a lot of regulatory attention, not just here in the US, but certainly in the UK with Wonga's success there on payday lenders. And the perception has been that payday lending is predatory, and even though it helps people out of a spot, that actually they end up worse off than they are. So you've tried to solve that problem. So tell us how this is actually able to help someone with their credit score, for example, in the U.S.
Right. So it's important to point out some of the differences between some other countries in the United States. In the U.S., you're effectively born with no credit score. You have to sort of establish your credit. And then as you sort of generate, you typically start at a top and you work your way down. So you're sort of the sort of running joke in the industry is you're born with an 800 FICO and you only go down from there. Well, so the problem is establishing your credit or building your credit afterwards. So we work on this in two ways. One, building your credit in the United States is almost like getting a job. It's hard to get a good job until you have work experience. It's hard to get work experience until you have a job. Credit is the same way. It's hard to establish credit until you have credit. So effectively, what that means for a lot of people is banks won't lend to you until you've established enough. You're called a thin file or a no file. You don't have very much or any credit history, and so there's not enough for a FICO score to develop. So for a certain segment of the of the market, what we're doing is we're helping them have that first step to be able to start having a reporting relationship to a bank. The other step is for people that have really bad credit. You know, maybe they had their house foreclosed on them, or they had a medical emergency, and they might have had good credit, but sort of due to an unexpected expense, their credit was demolished, or even they maybe had to declare bankruptcy. Well, what that effectively means is you're kind of the banks won't really work with you for 7 years. And so how do you start getting access to good financial services, and how do you start building your credit? We work with people immediately after bankruptcy, people that have bad credit. And what we can do is by giving them the ability to sort of have an appropriate loan amount, so they can make on-time payments and report those to the major credit bureaus that we can't guarantee, obviously, but we can provide them the opportunity to have positive reporting behavior reported to the bureaus that a bank and a credit union wouldn't work necessarily with our customer base.
Very interesting. So obviously a key part of your platform that you developed was this relationship with the credit bureaus.
Yes, it's something that I'm the most proud of everything that we do at LendUp, and I think we do a lot of really cool, innovative things. To me, that's really the differentiator that makes me proud, because as the banking world and the sort of startup private world move further apart, there's still important aspects that happen whether we like it or not. And having a good credit history is just so important when you're talking about buying a home or getting a student loan or getting a credit card or even, you know, renting an apartment. Landlords will use that to determine how many months of security deposit or even whether they'll rent to you. And a lot of employers for working class jobs will check your credit history and won't even give jobs to people that have bad credit. And so it affects a lot of our country's lives, whether they like it or not.
Well, I can only share my own experience of coming into the U.S. and having, what was I would consider a very healthy financial profile. And for the first two years being a non-citizen from a lending perspective. I mean, you know, wanting to buy a home in the US, with a thin credit file was disastrous. Now, of course, now that I have a mortgage and I have a great credit score, I'm being bombarded with offers for these things. But at the time, it was silence across the board. No one wanted to touch me because of this credit score issue. Have we become too dependent on credit scores in the U.S. when it comes to lending?
Absolutely. We're in one of the other things to point out is, and I understand, I worked at Citigroup before I left and started LendUp, and we're in still a fairly hostile regulatory environment. The industry is afraid, I think, and they should be. And so one of the things that they don't have to have a fear about is using FICO score and using a credit bureau. Now, the problem with that is, I think in 2008, we learned that FICO wasn't quite as predictive as we thought. And it's a very limited view into somebody's life, right? We exclude people like you, very successful entrepreneurs and business people that come from other countries. And you're locked out of the system because the banks are only looking at one particular data source. And when you only look at one particular data source, which is your major credit history, you're excluding a large part of the population.
Yeah.
People that have never had a banking relationship, people new to the country, young people that are in college or graduating college that are just starting on their career. And so I think we're at a point where it's an important source of data, but it's a limited insight into somebody's life.
So tell me a bit more about the algorithmic.
Algorithmic decisioning.
Yeah, algorithmic decisioning, and how important that is for the growth of your business.
So what we've done is so we think it's really important. I think, and I can hopefully tease up a question for the conversation you were alluding to about the future of the industry. What I think the future of the industry holds is that that every financial institution will have their own custom score. Technology is at a place right now where the ability to access data through common APIs is becoming easier and more prevalent. The information that is becoming available about people's lives is becoming easier to access. And the infrastructure that enables people to customize and create score models using very sort of very sophisticated statistical analysis is becoming fairly common and easy to access. So I think the days of FICO score being your only insight or maybe a small credit policy on top of that is slowly going to fade away towards everybody having a custom score that might use FICO score, but that will be an input into the model. It won't be the model.
Right. So that's, what percentage of your platform or what percentage of your development has gone into that intelligence, do you think? Is it a significant part of your platform in terms of what you've built out?
Yes. I mean, we've invested probably in the high hundreds of thousands to low millions in developing our own software to do two things. One, to validate and access a lot of data out there that exists that we think is also very compliant with Reg B and the Equal Credit Opportunity Act laws. So there's the major credit bureaus, there's minor credit bureaus, there's specialty bureaus, there's bank account histories, there's cell phone histories. And so I think there's a lot more data out there that is still very personalized, very reliable. And we've spent a lot of time, almost 2.5 years, but anywhere from the hundreds of thousands to the low millions in research and development to build our own model and infrastructure. And we've taken it one step ahead, and this is where I'm really excited. We've filed patents for this, and I think this is also the future of the industry is we've built a real-time interactive system. Mm. And that's one of the reasons why we can do full algorithmic decisioning where our competitors can't. So in the notion where if there's an inconsistency of the data, what happens traditionally at a bank is you send it for what's called manual review, which is literally a customer service agent or a dedicated employee that is visually looking through your credit bureau data and your application to figure out why there's inconsistencies. Mm. So a lot of that is actually just scripts and rules that that exist, and so they're following a set of rules, but they don't have the power to interact with the customer in real time. So that's what we've really pioneered, and that's what I'm really proud of, is as people are applying, our application is actually animated. It's a dynamic application. So theoretically, everybody in the world could have a different application because we're building a real-time risk model catered specifically to that applicant at the time. So if there's an inconsistency of data, our system will automatically populate more fields to ask for more verification or more validation or more authentication. So the customer is having a real-time interface as they're applying for the loan. They're not having to wait, you know, a day to 7 days to 30 days for someone to call them to ask them for clarifying information. We just in real time populate the additional fields or data or authentication or permissions we need. And so the customer gets a full real time experience. And the powerful thing is they get their answer immediately. They're not waiting. They know right away whether they've been approved. They know right away whether they've been declined. So they don't have to wait around because if we can't help them, we want to help get them the ability to either go somewhere else for help or point them in a better direction.
And I think that's the benchmark that's interesting here. Both, both with Lending Club and with you guys, you're talking about much easier process of application,
yes,
faster approval times. We really are in a real-time world these days, so it really doesn't make a lot of sense for banks or lending institutions to say to you, "Listen, we need 5 days to make a decision on your loan." That's just because some guy in the back of the room is having to look through paperwork and flick through it and have to sort of stamp approved or decline on this stuff. But, you know, we, as you say, with the rules engines, we can get a lot better at that. So,
yeah. And you also minimize, sort of human error.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Very, very interesting. So tell us about your recent funding round and what you guys are planning for the year.
Yeah, so we were fortunate enough to raise a seed round to kick us off the ground and let us build, spend time really building our technology. And then last October, we raised a $14 million Series A led by Google Ventures with participation from most of our investors. But we brought in two other very strong funds along with Google Ventures. One is Data Collective, and it's a small fund based here in Silicon Valley that focuses purely on data science and predictive analytics. And then we also brought in QED Investors, which is a fund started by Nigel Morris, the co-founder of Capital One, based on the East Coast. So we supplemented those with a lot of other angels and entrepreneurs in the Valley, but the majority was Google Ventures, who participated in our seed round, really believing and seeing the power of how much we could accomplish with new software and new data to really give people a significantly better option than what exists in the market.
So a 70 million round for an A is pretty big round.
Yeah, 14 million A. It's a good sized round.
So how has that changed the business for you guys?
Honestly, we've hired a few more people, but we're not sort of using that money to try and fuel the fastest, biggest growth around. We really want to build a sustained company for the long haul. Mm. And so we ended up hiring more engineers and more modeling people, a few more marketing people, and a huge customer insights team. And one of the main things is that we want to do is work really closely with regulators and work really closely with our customers to make sure that what we're doing can be a large, sustained business in the future. And so what it does is it gives us a lot more runway, it gives us a lot more flexibility, and it gives us a lot more confidence in the business to be able to attract a much higher caliber talent than we think we could ever have done without their support.
So when it comes to regulators, are you talking about people at the CFPB, or who are you engaging with on that side?
Yeah, so exactly. We are working really closely with the CFPB, and so the CFPB has been pretty amazing at reaching out to Silicon Valley and the technology world, and so they started something called a Project Catalyst, and so we're working closely with their team there, and a lot of our regulating bodies are state agencies, and so since we are doing something that is very drastically different than in the industry, it's cheaper, it's significantly more transparent, there's no debt traps. For the first time, this customer base can build credit and get access to significantly cheaper credit. We've actually been reaching out to attorney generals and each state's Department of Corporations to sort of introduce ourselves and help them understand what we're doing and why we think it's a better alternative for their communities and their citizens. And it's actually been really funny. It's something that we feel strongly about in building those relationships. And we're getting reactions like, you guys are the first short-term lender that has ever reached out to us. They're taking the calls because they're more curious. Normally they're used to prosecuting people, not having people introduce themselves and want to talk and engage. So it's been fun, and it's nice to have the ability to have that dedication and time to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us about the next couple of months or the next few months. What are the big things planned over at LendUp, or is it just business as usual?
No, it's never business as usual. Come on, Brett. We're an early stage startup. One of the other things that sort of I left out was we spent 2 years focusing on California and California only. And we did this because we wanted to make sure that what we were doing was actually improving our customers' lives, that we were able to graduate them successfully to better loans at significantly cheaper rates. And so one of the main reason that we raised the money was to take the pilot, which we felt really comfortable with in California, and expanding that to all of the states that allow short-term lending. So we've been very busy applying for our licenses in each of the 37 states that Wow. Allow short-term lending to happen. And so this year is going to be is going to be a national expansion for LendUp. And we have a couple exciting things in the work. You'll have to bring me back on the show in another couple months.
Oh, we'd love to. We'd love to. Great. Well, that's a good point for us to have a quick break, and then I'd like to ask Tom to join us in the discussion for the final segment as we sort of talk through what the lending market is going to look like in 10 years here in the US based on all these technologies and so forth. So can you stick around, Sasha?
Yes, absolutely. We'd love to.
Great. So we'll just have a quick break and we'll be right back. You're with Brett King and we're talking breaking banks.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Attend Payments 2014 to meet the forward-thinking leaders and disruptors who are transforming how we pay and get paid. Get a glimpse into the next wave of payments innovations and challenges through fast-paced interactive demonstrations, educational sessions, and a buzzing exhibit hall. Register now at payments.nacha.org. Payments 2014 is presented by NACHA, the Electronic Payments Association, the recognized leader in payment system education, the Payments Conference. Transform imagination into strategic innovation. Register today at payments.nacha.org. Have you friended us on Facebook yet? Why not? Just go to facebook.com/World Talk Radio or search for the keywords World Talk Radio. Once you're a part of our Facebook network, you'll receive daily messages about what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and new happenings at the World Talk Radio Network. And you can add your voice to the always active discussions on our timeline. Just go to facebook.com/World Talk Radio or search for World Talk Radio.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. So we've got Tom Green from Lending Club and Sasha Orloff from LendUp on the show, and we've been talking their respective businesses, which very, very interesting. If you missed the first segment of the Lending Club, they had a monster month in January with $258 million added to their loan book, their record month. They seem to have these, though, every month as their growth increases. And Sasha was talking about LendUp's really interesting approach to credit decisioning with some interesting data approaches and so forth. So Tom and Sasha, welcome back for the final segment.
Hi, Brett.
So Tom, maybe I just will start with this. Obviously, you guys have had some incredible growth, and there seems to be no let up to that. So yeah, let's talk 5 to 10 years out. What does the personal lending market look like in the United States? We've had mortgage brokers and so forth for a couple of decades in the U.S., but you know, we're talking about a revolution in personal lending here, based on removing the friction and sort of this different approach to customer engagement and acquisition. So where does this lead to in 10 years' time? What's the industry going to look like?
Well, I think there's going to be a ton of change in 10 years. That's a long time these days. And I think we all sort of have this perception now that things are changing faster than they ever did. And I think it's important to realize that that perception is actually reality. It took 60 years from the first year telephones were available to get decent adoption, and now we've all seen the iPad rocket from 0 to 100 million users in just 3 years, and things are just getting faster and faster. So I think change will continue to be more and more rapid over time. I think specifically in the lending market, you're going to see a few things happen. One, you're going to see, and it won't shock you to hear me say this, you're going to see the lending club model become larger and larger over time. The sort of disruptive nature of the model will continue, and will really sort of grow rapidly, and will also be rolled out to other credit markets beyond just the personal loan market. I think that's one trend. A second, which Sasha alluded to, is data is becoming bigger, and it's becoming more available on a real-time basis. And so I think you're going to see increasing use of a wider variety of sources of data in financial services. And it'll be interesting to see how the regulatory environment evolves, if at all, because at the moment there's a lot of, as Sasha mentioned, there's a lot of regulation around what can and can't be used. And then I think you're going to see the continued trend towards interactions being more online, more mobile. We now have the generation of millennials, which have grown up as digital natives and which are comfortable interacting entirely on mobile. And so you have examples like GoBank, which is a native mobile bank, which I think even 5 or 10 years ago would have been unheard of. So rolling forward another 10 years, I think quite frankly there'll be things that exist that we can't even imagine yet, but there's going to be a lot of change.
Absolutely. So Sasha, maybe I throw this one at you. We had a question from the Twitterati, which was, do you guys plan on implementing social media signals into your credit decisioning matrix? And maybe, Tom, you might have some thoughts about that. In terms of the mobile behavior and the social media insights and things like that, where is this, how are we going to incorporate this more into the business of lending, do you think, Sasha?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I'm glad you changed the subject because I don't think I had anything more to say after those big changes for the future. real-time software and sort of government. But that speaks to the point. We have our own data science team. We have our own software team and our own infrastructure team. So we collect a lot of data. And we've done tests with social media. We've done tests with things that are sort of on the breaking edge, the bleeding edge of what the government might consider appropriate according to sort of Reg B and equal credit opportunity, sort of what data is appropriate. So we don't actually use any of it in our underwriting decisions today, but we do have a unique capability. And so we're looking forward to helping sort of promote that dialogue and getting the government and banks comfortable taking new data and incorporating it into lending decisions. And we do have found some pretty interesting things. And I can share a couple. In case any regulators are listening, we don't use any of this in underwriting. This is just sort of side project analysis. But what you find is that if you have a very strong cohesive social media presence, and it isn't just sort of how many followers, but who is the makeup of those followers, and that can be in terms of sort of distance and closeness and proximity and interaction. You tend to have strong social ties, and we haven't figured out specifically why, but we are seeing that what that does is it sort of demonstrates a lot around sort of social cohesion and trust in your life and your public face and your reliability. And we don't know whether that's just simply because you shared social media or because those ties happen to actually be relevant. But I think there's a lot of signal in there, and we would love to sort of formally use it. But our lawyers don't feel comfortable quite yet doing it.
Mm.
I do think that the first step that will hopefully sort of get people starting to feel comfortable is helping to use it for some identity stuff. So matching identities, helping with geographic location, helping with some fraud, I think those might be ways in which you're not making a credit decision necessarily, but you're helping with some of the factors that help with fraud and identity. And I'm hoping that will be the first step that will get government and big banks comfortable starting to think about how powerful alternative data can be.
Right. Now, Tom, you guys are very proactive with the regulators as well, aren't you? I mean, this is in itself, I think, a fairly significant shift in philosophy for someone like, Lending Club, because the banks tend to be more about, you know, we'll ask for forgiveness rather than ask for permission. You guys are also very proactive in the space with regulators, aren't you?
We are, yes. And similar to what Sasha was saying, we also proactively reached out to the CFPB in order to explain our business model and get their feedback. And they were very supportive of it because of the benefits that it offers to participants on both sides of the marketplace. We think it's of critical importance to frankly be the good guy. We want to be on the right side, not just of the regulator, but frankly of public opinion. We want everyone to understand that what we're trying to do is the right thing. And we think that commitment makes our company much more valuable than sort of trying to hide or get away with anything.
And you guys, I have to say, you guys are the sort of one of the pioneers and leaders in that. And we've taken a lesson here at LendUp in watching the evolution of LendingClub really be transparent, not just to their customers, but be transparent and open with their investors and the government. And it's clear that you guys are executing well, and not to take that away from you at all. But it's really been impressive, and I think it's a change from the defensive tactics which most of the financial, the consumer financial services are today.
I agree. Well, that's good praise coming from LendUp there, Tom. So listen, one question, and maybe I know Sasha, you'll have definitely an opinion on this, but how does we've seen a recent trend, obviously with the acquisition of WhatsApp, which everyone's talking about the last couple of days. WhatsApp is significant in that it was a mobile shift in terms of social networking. So when it comes to mobile and the context of lending, because a lot of lending happens in respect to, some of it is planned, but things like buying a car, for example, this could be a quite contextual lending decision, or being at the grocery store and needing cash to buy your groceries and you don't have any money in the account. These are really interesting contextual moments. So what role does mobile have to play in the next 5 to 10 years in that enabling a lending decision? Who wants to go first?
I'm happy to go first. Tom, you go first, because my population is quite different than yours.
Sure, Tom.
I think, as I was saying, mobile is something people are increasingly comfortable with. And then, Brett, I think you're absolutely right that there is an ability for mobile to be at the point of purchase, which is important. I think that's going to be an important trend. I can't speculate or comment on exactly what we're planning on that space, if anything. But I think you're right that trend is there, and that it's an obvious and clear sort of great customer experience potential to enable people to sort of take out a loan at the point of purchase. You can even go a little further and think about walking around a store and using iBeacon or a similar technology to actually get out your phone in front of even specific items and see what your monthly payment would be if you were to finance that specific item. So I think there's a lot that the future holds there that's really interesting.
Yeah, Sasha?
Yeah, we're betting very huge on mobile, and that's one of the reasons why we worked really hard to have a full algorithmic decisioning, and that we can get it into a format that we felt comfortable with, still as transparent even on a mobile phone. Because you have to think, one of the important parts about the sort of walking around in a store and financing something immediately is you need to be able to have a very easy application, because typing into a mobile phone apparently just is not fun. But you need to be able to have a decision instantly. And if you can only give a decision instantly to 10% of your people and then 20% go to manual review and 70% are declined, that doesn't create an experience that is enjoyable for the customer. So we've worked really hard to be able to do instant decisioning from a mobile phone for that specific reason, that you, wherever you are, whenever you are needing credit, whether it's because you got in a car accident and you don't have money to pay for the tow, or you're in the hospital and you need to pay for services, or you're in a Best Buy and you want to finance your television at a lower rate than the Best Buy card, that right on your mobile phone you can fill out our application, or if you've already filled out your information online, you can just literally a few swipes, and you can have money ported to anywhere you want, to a cash register, a connected cash register, to an existing debit or credit card directly into your bank account, to you know, thousands of cash disbursement areas. We think that's seamless,
rapid, instant integration.
Yeah. I think you combine something like that with a peer-to-peer lending marketplace like Lending Club, and you really have this amazing ability to make an instant decision anywhere, anytime, on any connected device, and you also have thousands or millions of people from major banks to individuals who are all interested in funding it, and I think that's the future.
You know, we've only got a couple of minutes left, so this question is probably one we could spend an entire show on. But Tom, you know, are we starting to see the emergence of a new disruptive layer of lending that is sort of replacing the old traditional players? Is that really what we're talking about? Because that's what when we saw, the Kindle come along and the iPod and iTunes, you know, the leaders that came out of those disruptions weren't the incumbents. Is this the creation of, you know, a new layer of lending capability?
I think the existing lenders, such as the banks, really have a choice. They don't have to go the way of of Kodak and Blockbuster. I think the choice there is really to embrace technology, embrace the innovation, and work with the disruptors. And so one of the things that we are offering up is the ability for banks to actually use the Lending Club platform to offer loans to their own customers. And we're getting a lot of interest in that kind of a model. So we actually don't see this disruption as being one that replaces the existing system. We see it as one that enables the existing system to get better for the benefit, really, of frankly the existing participants as well as their customers.
Great. Well, guys, it's been a fantastic show. I want to thank you both for joining us. Very interesting. You're both on fire at the moment, so congratulations for your recent successes. So, Sasha Roloff from LendUp, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
And Tom, thanks for the support from Lending Club for appearing on the show today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
So once again, big news items today. The acquisition of Simple for $117 million. Well done, Josh and Shamir. We'll definitely get these guys on a show sometime soon to talk about what happens next. But you've been with Brett King. You're on Breaking Banks, and I'll be happy to speak to you guys next week and continue the journey. Thanks very much. See you next week.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. We'll explore more changes and challenges next week.